And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station, streaming at those times live at richarddugan.com. And the podcasts are also available at richarddugan.com, the homepage and radio shows page, as well as SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes Radio. Let's see, where else are we? Player FM, I lose track after a while, Blueberry, and a whole bunch of other places that folks are putting the podcasts up, and we are very grateful for that. And we encourage you to go to our guest website. Well, how do you do that? Well, in the SoundCloud player, there's a little grocery cart, and when you click on it, that takes you to our guest website. We'll be giving you our guest website here shortly so that you can continue your research and investigation, continue your evolutionary process to make yourself a better person today than you were yesterday, tomorrow than you are today. Always a process of improvement or evolution. I realize that's a dirty word, but hey, the FCC hasn't banned it yet. And then, of course, if you like what you're hearing, you like what we're doing, you want to be a part of this program and what it's offering, and you'd like to support us financially, we do have a PayPal and Patreon account. It is at the bottom of the missions page, and maybe this is the first time you've listened to one of these programs. Well, while you're listening, why don't you go to our missions page, and you can read about the programming that we provide. You can also go to our radio shows page. You can see the myriad of guests we've had for over 12 years. I'm absolutely amazed at the diversity of guests and information and guidance, support, encouragement, inspiration, education that our guests give us. And today is going to be no exception. Now, I don't know if my guest is old enough to remember, and of course, he is not the person that I am thinking of, but he has the name of a newscaster, a fictional newscaster, who a dear friend of mine and I, who worked together for many years, created a character who was his son. And the son's name, and again, another fictional character, was Ned Baxter, and he would always tag out his little features we did on another station with, "I'm Ned, you might remember my dad, Ted Baxter." Well, my guest is Ted Baxter. The book is Relentless and How a Massive Stroke Changed My Life for the Better. And Ted, welcome to our radio program. Please do it in a newsy fashion so that we can keep our listeners interested. And I'm just kidding. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your show. It's great to be here.
I'm curious. Are you familiar with Ted Baxter?
Yes, I know. I know the character.
I loved him.
The star was he was played that game, and he was great.
He was great. He really was. And my dear friend back in Phoenix, his name is Michael O'Connor. He used to do that voice, always used to. As a matter of fact, we were doing the 1,000th episode, if you will, and we were meeting at this venue to celebrate the radio station's birthday, and they wrote out this long script of his movement through his career, and he made reference at one point to how he learned this from Lou Grant and he learned this from Mary, and he was molested several times by Sue Ann. And wondered why it ever stopped. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, you have quite the story, aside from Ned. But you, Ted, you have an incredible story where you were, and correct me if I'm using the wrong word here, you were quite the financier years ago with a rather prestigious financial institution, Price Waterhouse. And you were just kind of rolling along and doing great, and the money was terrific, and I'm sure the experience and all of those things. And then you might say, and then the wheels came off.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I had been in the financial industry for about 22 years. I worked for Pricewaterhouse, as you say, and CSFB. For 90% of that period of my career. And then I landed a great job for one of the premier investment hedge firms based in Chicago. The name of the firm was called Citadel Investment. So I thought, man, I made it. I was a global management director for a premier hedge fund and investment institution. My job was a global financial controller for the firm. I worked there from 2004 and part of 2005 until my tragedy happened. So, it was a huge job. I had a ton of responsibilities. What I loved, busy to the max every day. It was basically a dream job, but it was a lot of pressure with it and stress. And that was the beginning of the end. Okay. So I didn't have any warning signs for this. And so I'll tell you a small story of what happened to me. Mm-hmm. It was a truly terrifying. Okay, I was only 41 years old, so young. And this is back in April 21st, 2005, for about 14 years ago. I finished my business trip that day in London. Okay, I was based in Chicago, but I had to do my normal work during the day in London. I took a flight back to Chicago. That night, I was watching television, The Apprentice of all things, mm-hmm. and commercials with my wife. She asked me a question. I couldn't respond. And she repeatedly asked me questions about that. I wasn't responding. She came back up from her chair and came up by me. And at that point, she knew something was terribly wrong. Because she could see in my eyes. I stared into space. I started to sweat. A huge migraine had started, and I knew I was in trouble. My wife called the police immediately, and they called the paramedics. And I could hear words and sentences, but I couldn't formulate. I couldn't figure what they were saying. Paramedics were asking me simple questions like, "What is your name? Where are you right now? How many fingers am I holding up?" At that moment, I lost the power of language. I lost the power of comprehension. And I discovered this later. I lost my ability to use my right side of my body. So, yes, you might say I lost it all at that point, because I couldn't write, I couldn't speak. I had 10% of my comprehension that I have right now or at that point. I couldn't walk. My right side, my mobility was shot. It was frightening, terrifying, and tragedy. But that's where my journey started.
Well, I have never experienced anything like that, nor have I been around anyone who has. Although it was back in, I think it was early July, maybe late June, that I received a text from my family in the group form that my father was in the hospital. And that the word stroke was used. And of course, I'm not wanting to, you know, ask a whole bunch of questions, because we're not in a place where anybody really knows a whole lot right now, because he had just been admitted. And he lives in Phoenix, and I'm here in Santa Barbara. And so, you know, it's the texting and phones are about all I've got. Turns out it wasn't a stroke, and I suppose I should say thank goodness. But my mother, I can only imagine what my mother must have been going through, because he was totally non-responsive, though he was awake and so forth. I haven't talked to him about his experience as of yet. But, you know, we hear about these stories of people who, for example, they're bedridden and they're immobile, but they're alive. They're conscious. Maybe they have eye movement. And, you know, you sit there, you go, hey, what is going on? They're trapped inside this body. They can't communicate, really, other than, you know, again, maybe the eyes are moving or not, what have you. And you hear these stories of people who then wake up. You know, they wake up and they they say, oh yeah, I heard you there. I heard what you said, and I appreciate your being there. And this person said that, and that person said this, and this happened to me, and they took me down to have my scans and all of these different things, but they can't move. That has got to be probably one of the most frightening experiences, because now you're at the mercy of the outside world. These thoughts that started to race through your head, like, how do I know that they're really going to take care of me and it's going to be okay? Or did you have that sense of, I'm trusting that it's going to be okay, and my wife is here, and so forth? Tell me about that aspect of your experience.
Well, the first thing that came through my head was, I had a heart attack. This is what is going to be as having a heart attack, or at the end of I was sitting there on a bed in a hospital. I thought I had a seizure, but it didn't happen to be both of those things. It wasn't. When they came out, they said, you have a massive stroke. Now, of course, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't understand what they were saying. You know, I'm getting this from my wife. So, I mean, she was saying that, Ted, you know, look, you have to understand, you have just experienced a massive stroke, which is why you can't talk and you can't move your right side of your body. And she told me about this stuff, and I was so desperate. I couldn't believe it. And I was crying, you know. Of course you could do that. And of course, you know, I couldn't tell her, but I was crying. And, you know, my physical conditions were like weakness in my body. I mean, my right side was paralyzed. My right side, weakness of my eyesight. I couldn't see. Problems with balance and coordination, you know, it's all that stuff that you would expect if you wouldn't get something like this, hopefully. But if you did, I mean, that's what happens. And then after that, going through the speech problems, I mean, you can't talk. That, I mean, it's short term memory. I had 30 seconds and very slow. My behavior was slow. I didn't know where I was going. So, you know, that's what I experienced having a stroke.
Now, my dad is 88 this year, and you would expect something like that to happen, if it were to happen, to someone in his 80s or his 90s, but in your 40s? Are you kidding? Now, I don't know if there's a difference between these two situations, these two conditions, and I don't know how much education you now have had, but I'm guessing that you've probably educated yourself quite phenomenally. You probably have your PhD now in strokes and so forth. But my ex-father-in-law had an aneurysm that was there for decades, apparently. And then a few years back, it finally burst, and unfortunately he passed. What's the difference between, just because those are my points of reference today, an aneurysm and a stroke?
Well, to give you some factors here, there were two factors that were in play, and both of these things I didn't know. Okay, I had a DVT, which means a deep vein thrombosis in my right shin that broke loose, which created the blood clot. Now, that if that were the only thing, then I would have had a pulmonary embolus, and then after that I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I would have passed.
Mm-hmm.
So the second factor I had going on was I had a PFO, which means I needed a hole in my heart. So by that basically attracts the clot through my body by bypassing my lung, shooting the clot to my brain, and that caused my stroke. So, you know, I was talking to somebody from New York Times. She was just saying that was the best of your things that you probably could have, because it is a blessing in more ways than one, you know. Otherwise I'd be dying.
So one is a blood clot, the other is a weak blood vessel, and that bursts.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's an area I do want to get into. We may save it for our second segment, and that is the experience that you had. Do you consider yourself to have had an out of body or near death experience? Are you in that category?
I don't know. I don't know what when you say that. I don't know what you mean by that.
When you did not have any, there was no clinical process of death. You were always alive during this process. There was no period of time when your body shut down, your heart stopped.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So you did that. But it's about as close as you can get, because again, you're there in that body, and you know. Did you say also that you were, your thought process? Now I know you mentioned about the short-term memory loss, but even during this process, were you kind of processing the information as things were happening, or were you even able to do that under the circumstances, having had the stroke?
No, I couldn't.
Not at all.
For five days, there were things that were happening around me, but I didn't know what they were doing. And for example, I have a little problem with getting shots in your arm, but I could have taken like 100 of them, and put like IVs in my both arms and stuff. It didn't bother me at all during the 5 days.
Yeah, so you're not alone. I'm not a fan either, but I've found some ways of coping when I have to give blood for tests and so forth. You know, it's like, I tell you what, the next time I bang myself on the head, I'm coming in and you guys can siphon from my head. You know, it's like, it's one of those things. Or I've had this happen where I go in for the blood to have the blood drawn, and then a couple of days later, I'm actually doing some work and I injure myself and I have a little cut. I'm going, well, I could have given them this, you know, if they had just waited. But my understanding is that I think they call that the white coat syndrome, that a lot of guys have. It's really very interesting. And this issue is one that, from your research, is this becoming more common, or is it just that the population has gotten to such a level, such a number, that it's more pronounced, but by percentage of the population over, let's say, the last 50 or 100 years, it's still about the same? Or are we doing stuff to ourselves that's creating these strokes?
Yeah, I think it is happening nowadays than more when I had my stroke. And so that's the main answer for me. But I would say that now you could see, because I run this volunteer program every Mondays with probably 50 or 60 stroke survivors. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I run this, when I had this stroke experience 14 years ago, it didn't happen. So now you get people standing on there, in their living rooms, and they raise their hands and saying, like, you know what, I have a stroke also, and now I have aphasia. And you know, basically, and that's really what I'm really interested is getting the concept out there so that people know what aphasia is and what that what is that caused by having a stroke.
Tell us all that stuff. All right. Well, tell us what aphasia is and what it does or doesn't do.
aphasia, that which usually usually comes with having a stroke, head injury, or TBI, which is a traumatic brain injury. But the name of it is impediment of language, and inability to comprehend or formulate language. So there are approximately 2.4 million people in the United States that have aphasia, you know? So it's not, now there are a lot of flavors of aphasia. For example, global aphasia, conduction, anomia, stuff like that. You know, when I just became diagnosed having aphasia, I had the worst of it. I had global aphasia. And I couldn't, you know, I told you what I couldn't do. I couldn't, you know, which is all the abilities. So for the first year after my stroke, I could only say about 1,000 words at the most, which usually it was nouns. Mm-hmm. So I could, you know, I could say like a tree, a store. I could do that, but I couldn't. I couldn't use the verbs in the middle of that. Mm. And that tells why you're going to the store. You know, I mean, it's stuff like that. So by age four, a normal person has 4,000 to 5,000 words in your belt, and compare that what happened to me. I had 1,000 at the point I was 41 years old. It was crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, that there are a lot of young people with our technology today that have about 1,000 words of communication, verbal communication, because they don't know how to communicate verbally because they're constantly communicating on their phones and texting and so forth. And it drives me nuts. The word like is used, or you know, over and over again. But I know that's a whole different issue. And in terms of your ability to communicate, is that today, here in 2019, is that the most difficult aspect of your life today? Or if it's not, what's the most difficult aspect of living these days, post-stroke?
Well, right now, my thing is I don't just forget about it, my speech, because I have to, you know, concentrate on it. But now I don't put it. It's not those going on in my conversation with when I wake up and have my coffee with my wife. We have to talk about, you know, my speech that day. No, not at all. So, but at the point I started doing this 14 years ago, I couldn't talk. So yeah, so I was all in. I have to figure this out. You want to talk about resiliency and determination. I had it. I still have it. So, but now I'm thinking about, okay, where can I go around the hospitals that I can do some presentations, and I can talk about what happened to me and my experience. You know, what they can do. What stroke survivors, aphasia survivors, what they can do now that to maybe help them than if they had not met me, then they wouldn't even know. So I can tell them about that kind of stuff. And I'm also teaching some clinicians, you know, about the therapists, about, you know, you shouldn't use these words when you meet a new stroke survivor, because he doesn't like that.
Yeah,
you know, he wouldn't understand. So that's what I'm worrying about right now.
Yeah. But, you know, I've never believed, as I've gone through my career and done different jobs and so forth, even when they were outside of the realms of broadcasting, that there was ever any wasted time. Initially, I did. I thought, oh, I'm not in radio. How is this job helping me? And I'm curious, how has your past life, shall we say, as a financier, what lessons have you been able to take from that life, that career, that experience to help you through these days as you not only work through your, because I would think that you're still in the process of recovery, but mm-hmm. also then in being an advocate for other stroke victims and their, I don't know, their families and friends, their caregivers, et cetera, et cetera. How has your past life supported you in that regard?
Well, yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think there are three abilities that I had when I moved up my career as a financial consultant. One was problem solving. You know, I just had a knack for analyze the situation, diagnose what the problems are, and then how you can attack to attack on them so that it gets better. So that was one. And the other thing I was saying, like, I did talk, you know, when I ran 200 people at CSFB. You know, there were 200 employees that worked through the world, Singapore, Hong Kong, London, New York City. And when I get on the telephone on a conference call once every Monday with just to tell them what's going on, this radio, that CSFB, for example, I did the same thing for doing that with my aphasia right now. I'm doing that in the beginning of Monday mornings. What I did during the last week. You know, who am I going to hospitals I'm going to visit, during this month? What am I going to tell about those people about aphasia, about stroke awareness, that kind of stuff? So, I mean, it's a different way of communicating, but it is communicating with the words.
Mm. Well, I have to say that, first of all, you're doing just fine communicating with us here on the program, and we greatly appreciate you giving us this time. We're going to take a break here on the program. We're going to hear a few things from some of our other guests and so forth. We're talking with Ted Baxter. He's the author of a memoir. It's called Relentless, and it's how a massive stroke changed my life for the better. And we're going to get into that a little bit more in our second segment here on the program. Ted, if you'll stay with us, we'll continue on here. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Don't you go away. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Just a reminder, you want to listen to the podcast, kids. You want to go to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn, Radio, Stitcher, and so forth to listen to the entire interview, to listen to all of the interviews that you'd like to listen to, and basically give yourself that evolutionary boost, as it were. We're talking here in our second half of the program, continuing to talk with Ted Baxter, talking about a memoir, Restless. And it's how a massive stroke changed my life for the better. Ted, welcome back to the program. Thanks for staying with us.
Thank you very much.
Now, my wife has been very concerned over my health over the last few years, especially when I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. One time, as a matter of fact, I kind of compare blood pressure readings with her nephew. And so far, I still have him beat. My highest was, I think, 184 over 120. And, of course, my wife then, when she saw that, she says, "You do know you're in the stroke zone." And I said, "No, I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that."
Well, that's the one. That's the first signal.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, in your case, this really not only opened your eyes, but it's changed your life. And we've been talking a bit about that in terms of life changing. Obviously, we don't want the other kind of life changing experiences where, you know, it could lead to paralysis or for that matter, even death. And it does happen. And what I'm finding so interesting, Ted, is the fact that many young people, my God, it seems like more and more young people are suffering from these kinds of conditions that young people of our age, when we were younger, we weren't dealing with those things. And it looks like our society is I don't know what to say to that. What give me your comments.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. I mean, because you know, my situation, it wasn't a blood pressure or obesity or something like that. It wasn't that at all. It was just not really paying enough attention for taking a flight from Asia Pacific to, you know, to Europe and going back and forth, and then not really paying attention to the fact that my job was really pressure. It was all about stress, and I didn't really, you know, paying attention to that, to the fact that it happened to me. I mean, that I had a massive stroke up there. Well, it didn't happen up there, but as soon as I landed, it happened like 2 hours from that. And, you know, I should have paid more attention to the fact that you need to be very careful when you go. You can walk down the street, and you know you can get a an accident with a car driver. You know what I mean? It's stuff like situation now.
Yeah, and that's the other aspect of it. There are so many more complex aspects to our lifestyle. It doesn't necessarily have to be high blood pressure. It doesn't necessarily have to be being overweight. I mean, I'm shocked when I see individuals, they show these people who have had strokes, and I'm going, they don't look obese. They don't look, you know, and so on and so forth. But then again, you don't know any of the underlying conditions that there might be. How have you been able to reduce the level of stress in your life? Are you still concerned that you could have another, or have you been able to reach a point where you're starting to feel comfortable and maybe relax a little bit and say, you know, okay, that was the wake up call as it says, you know, we're going to stay away from that. We're not going to have to worry about that for a while.
Yeah, you know, I think it is right now. I'm very careful of my stress and my anxiety. Around there, you know, and I'm the first person to tell my wife about this, and you know, she knows it. And so if I get myself into a situation where I am going to be a talk a lot, like for hours or 2 hours or 3 hours, And she will tell me, look, you stop that because you're getting yourself in anxiety, stress. That's one of those signals that you need to be watch that you have it. So that's what I'm aware of. Because I'm so aware of it now, and because of the stroke, and now I have aphasia and stuff. I'm aware of it right now, so I'm always, when I go to exercise my every day, every other day, I'm very careful about, I said to my trainer the other day, I said, look, I can't pull that type of a machine. So let's move it. Let's try a different exercise. And he said that to me. So that's fine. It's fantastic. No.
Yeah. Well, I know that we're all looking for those for those outs, so to speak. I tell my wife and I tell everybody else, as far as my high blood pressure is concerned, it's temporary. It's just a phase, kind of like puberty, kind of like my acne when I was a teenager. This is just a phase, and I'm looking at my 60s because it's been my 50s where it's been, more prominent. And I just feel like, okay, something is coming. There, I just feel it inside that there's a new period in my life that is coming closer and closer to me, or I'm getting closer and closer to it, that is just going to change everything. And I can get off of the meds and I can live my life. Maybe I'll find a natural alternative to the pharmaceuticals, which I would certainly prefer, but I'm not afraid of the pharmaceuticals per se.
Right.
But again, I think that's another aspect to a lot of the what are classified as chronic conditions that we suffer with due to stress or due to obesity or due to the foods that we eat, that kind of stuff.
Yes, right.
That we are told that it's permanent, or that the insinuation is that it's permanent, when in fact it doesn't have to be. That's kind of where I was going with that last question, in terms of reaching that place in your life where you say, hey, that was a phase in my life and I'm moving on. What are you doing these days? What is it that encompasses Ted Baxter's life that brings him joy and excitement? I was going to say moderate excitement, but that's entirely up to you how you want to gauge that. But what is it that fulfills Ted Baxter these days?
Well, nowadays, I'm spreading awareness and education of strokes and aphasia to the population, that this is first and probably is the only objective I have, really. But to do that, to get up there and tell the population, using a radio station like we are having right now, or a speaking event coming, I need to train myself to make sure that I can get up there. And so I'm talking about and very intelligible topics like that. So I'm doing that as an author, using this book as a launch pad to give me ways to spread awareness to the people that have this, or hopefully the people that I can change their ways to doing some things that give them low blood pressure. So that's the first one. And the second one, I love volunteering myself to hospitals to tell stroke survivors. And nowadays I'm feeling myself, I'm dealing with the caregivers of the stroke survivors, what they can do right now to help them to give that techniques to their stroke survivors, that they're going to get themselves better than they are right now. So I'm in a group. It's called Communication Recovery Group. It's in Fullerton, California here. So I do this every Monday, right? Get up there at 9 o'clock in the morning, talking to the SLPs, you know, what we're going to do that day. And then 10 o'clock starts the, like, about 70 to 80, of the clients that were our people that, stroke survivors and our, aphasia people. So I'm doing that also. So if I could do that, those two things, and better, I'll be fantastic.
Well, I know that we all have to find those types of activities, if you will, that do that for us. And it seems to me that by being involved as you are in those areas, not only are you learning and educating others, but also I think that helps to keep you away from that. Well, we'll call it. Well, it keeps you away from the stroke zone.
Yes, that's,
you know,
right.
And that's, you want to stay as far away from that as possible. For those who are just joining us, can you describe for us, from a physiological standpoint, what is a stroke?
Yeah, sure. A stroke is a the condition you occur. You know, we occur when blood flow to a area of brain of your brain is cut off. That is what is a stroke.
Hmm. So it's cut off through different aspects, or is it like a clot, a blood clot, or can a vessel just kind of kink up? I guess I'm not okay.
Yes. So you know, of course, you can go through this from stroke. You're going to be ischemic stroke, a hemorrhagic stroke, right? So in my condition, I had a blood clot. That which started from my right shin, and it moved itself up my system, my body, and into my heart, and then it shoot the blood clot to my brain, and at that point it couldn't, because I needed more oxygen, but because I had this stroke. Occurs when blood flood to the area of brain was cut off because I had this blood clot.
We're talking right now with Ted Baxter. He is not only a stroke survivor, but an educator in this area. He's written a book, a memoir called Restlessness. Why restlessness?
Restlessness. restlessness. If you're picking that up in my book, that was what when I just, like, if you just happen to get your prepare yourself to get a on a flight from, let's say you're going from LA to Singapore. Okay, so restlessness, it means to me that that's relates to my leg, which just, it's not throbbing, but it's, you can just feel something was going on there, and in my right leg. So when it's just like, I don't know another way to describe this, but it was. It wasn't like in pain, but you know, if you move your right leg, and you can shook it off.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't shook it off, then you know that the restlessness is a little more than just quote unquote restlessness. It becomes going to be a DVT or a, you know, hopefully not a blood clot.
Yeah. And the other aspect to all of this is just in general health. Now, you said that yours was basically due to your lifestyle and the stress as you being an auditor and so forth at Price Waterhouse. And what's sort of what I don't know if this is the right phrase to use or not, Ted, but ironic or not, you were very successful. And yet you got slammed with a stroke. You know, it's like, well, yeah. How can that be? The guy's so successful. So I have to wonder if you were as – and I guess it depends upon your definition of success too, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, my background really was in the financial industry world. I was in that world for 22-plus years. So I started off as an auditor and all that kind of stuff, and I was a Pricewaterhouse partner in Tokyo for four or five years, and I moved to CSFB as a CFO, financial controller, and then finally I had this fantastic job. It was at Citadel Investment. I was a global controller, managing director, and this one I was going from the one of 15,000 people as Credit Suisse to one of 1,500 people in Citadel, and this was absolutely the best job. It was a dream job. And I have all that, and then you know what I think I messed up at the point. I took the flight back from Chicago from London to Chicago, and I just sleep at the on the. In the flight up there, and then I came back into Chicago, and then at the minute I said to the driver, I said, "Look, I don't have anything with this, but right now, but I have some restlessness, to use your word, in my right leg, so whatever." And they said, just take me home or whatever. And everything else was fine. And then we went to have dinner with my ex-wife. And my point was there with my wife. And then we did it, with sushi about half an hour, and I came back from that in my room, and in our bedroom, and that's it. Stops right at that point. I was watching the Apprentice, and then after that, I could tell you it's 8 p.m. at 11 minutes after, where my life changed. At a minute.
And do you have recollections in reference to this experience of a deeper sense, metaphysical, if you will, or spiritual context? Was there anything like that in your life?
No. No, it's what happened to me just before I moved to the hospital. I was sitting there, you know, in my couch. I was laying down, and then my wife, you know, she knew something was going up.
Yeah.
And but she didn't tell me. I mean, I couldn't tell her, because at the point I lost the ability for language. I didn't have any of that. Mm. And in my right side of my body didn't do anything. I mean, because it couldn't move. So So in my brain, I keep listening to the words, like people were using different words and same, you know, like the paramedics came and they were using some medical terms and concepts. Like I know. I mean, it's just all simple things to you and to, you know, to people that, you know, just if they're listening to this. I mean, you know, sure you understand what they're saying, but I couldn't because I had a massive stroke, and at the point it was global aphasia, which means you don't understand what the people are saying.
Yeah. And you're not able to communicate anyway, even if you could.
Yeah. That's right.
I find it interesting, too, the diagram on the cover of your book has an interest. It's like a map starting out at the bottom here with, the subtitle, How a Massive Stroke, and the letter O in stroke is a dot where you started from. And then it just is, it's going all over the place until it gets to the pin. And it's all the shape, kind of the squiggles and squirrels in terms of the shape of a brain.
That's right.
And there are all different types of levels of strokes, and there are all different types of paralysis. And in some cases, there is no paralysis, right? I mean, in some cases, I don't know whether if that's considered a mild stroke, or regardless of the severity of the stroke, it didn't affect, you know, a person's ability to function normally. I don't know if that's considered, if that's such a thing as a benign stroke, as opposed to a malignant one, per se. Are there methods for, like in your situation, because it was due to stress, you de-stress your life and maybe you can avoid it in the future, but are there methods, or have they come up with any new techniques, any new devices? I mean, like for the equivalent, let's say, of a pacemaker for the heart. That can detect before a stroke happens. Is there anything like that on the in the forefront, as far as you know?
Yeah. Now there are some other treatments that these are new since I had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing is they have robotic therapies around there. That you can really cut the fact that if you can't have your right side of your body if it doesn't functioning as properly, you put it through this robotic therapy that change that in a minute. So I mean that's one thing that they're really the researchers are really seeing if that's worth or not. There's some drugs to strengthen nerve cell connections. Actually the biggest thing is excitement about stem cells and growth factor. Replacing damaged tissue in the brain, the growth factor to grow new synapses, you know, that kind of stuff. So those are a couple of things that they didn't have that when I happened to have my stroke happened to be in there right now.
Well, it's kind of like it with you and me. I had to wait for technology to catch up to me in order to be able to get a lens implant so that I would be able to drive. And I mean, it took 36 years, but I wasn't going anywhere, you know, but I will tell you this much, even without it, I was doing fine. I was having a great life for the most part, you know, enjoying the work that I do and all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, boom, here it is. Now I'm curious with the minimal paralysis that you have experienced, and if that's the right word for me to use, or post-stroke symptoms, is that the right term?
Well, I guess because what I have, it was a semi-paralysis of my body. My right side of my body couldn't function, and I had to do some things to try to use that mm-hmm. side of my body that then now has it can correct itself now. All right. So I still have a weakness on my right side, but it's not like you couldn't tell, you couldn't see it when, like, if you saw me walking down the street today, you wouldn't know that, right? But the only person that knows it is my trainer, obviously, mm-hmm. and my SLPs, because they've read my book. So they know that my right side of my body is still a weakness, but not the regular people, pedestrian just walking down the street.
Right.
So that's what it means that I had a semi paralysis.
Right. Are any of these paralyses somewhere down the road, is it possible for them to be reversed to where you're back to normal, if you will, whatever that is? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sure something is, some doctors is thinking about this. I think it's probably that they tried to use these robotic machines or something, and if you happen to have the stroke and they put you in this is like a room that's full of robotic therapies, maybe you could use some of that.
Yeah. But well, I want to tell people that they can go to your website, which is tedbaxter.com. That's TEDW for the middle initial, and BAXTER.com. Find out more about Ted, as well as the book Restless. And it is How a Massive Stroke Changed My Life Forever. One final question before I let you go here in regards to Restless, and that is, in terms of changing your life, some might say that it didn't change your life for the better. Do you see this as a, not just a wake-up call and a warning or what have you as far as your lifestyle, but have you found a blessing and or / miracle in regards to how this has changed your life?
Absolutely. This stroke situation that happened to me was absolutely a blessing for me, because I was giving me the chance to recalibrate my life priorities. Okay, mm-hmm. So for example, it took me, you know, a little time to do this, but two years ago, I married my better wife. And she's just she's perfect for me. I mean, she's great. She's beautiful, whatever. So that's first thing. And then the second thing, it was this being a massive stroke, but you know, and you might not know this, but prevented me from dying. Because if I had that situation again, where I had the DVT moving up my right side, blah blah blah, and it's got to my point where it was going to be a pulmonary embolism, which means I would have passed, I would have died. It, because of having had a stroke, it bypassed my lung and got into my region of my heart and my brain and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it prevented me from dying. And then the other thing is, I would say that I have a calmer, happier life, and helping with people, the people that need. To tell them they should do this one or that one, or you can assist them what they need. So I'm doing that also.
Well, congratulations to you on that, and we wish you continued good health and wellness and avoidance of a future occurrence. I know that your wife probably feels that way as well. I know my wife would certainly concur with that kind of statement. She. You know, I don't know. It seems kind of funny that they get so concerned sometimes. I don't understand it. I understand it completely, let me tell you, because she's had her own concerns, her own issues, and I get concerned when she's not doing well. Once again, Ted Baxter, my guest. And, Ted, I'm going to ask you three final questions I ask all of my guests at the end of the interview. You may have addressed some of the answers in the context of our interview here today, but I'm going to ask them to you directly, and you answer them, and we'll wrap this program up. And again, I thank you for giving us so much time.
Okay, no problem.
First question is, who is Ted Baxter?
He's in the character of the radio station, well, the TV radio station that was from Minnesota.
Well, actually,
right?
I'm referring to you. Who is Ted Baxter?
Ted Baxter right now is just a regular guy that's just trying to live my life and just doing it as a very, very thriving life.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I would want to have more stroke survivors or people with aphasia that just as I have would get better and improve themselves to really change their life.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Okay, life purpose. That's a tough one. Let me see. Life purpose. My life purpose, I think, is going to be to do a great family with my wife. I have to figure that out, and doing vocations that I can help, and I enjoy the passion of doing that every day. And then I think the other one has to really be my family and my hope that everything good on their side. I'll be a point now where I'm going to spend more time with them, and then that's it, really, a life purpose.
Ted Baxter, thank you again for joining us here on the program. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you much success with the book and the work that you're doing to help survivors of strokes to understand and help get through their lives. And we encourage you, and we also wish you good health as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.